We become a race of peeping Toms.
Something happened. Something was happening. I had no idea.
Where is her treacherous husband now? But in a place where she can visit, if she wished, mine. It's with the ancestors.
Yeah, I'm drinking, Luann.
How can you hold cake and not eat it?
No shit, you guys got coke here.
Oh my God, of course.
I mean, I know to you I'm just your old fat Aunt Mattie Faye. I'm more than that, sweetheart.
These are godless times, Mrs. Snell.
You're all feckin' boring. With your piddling grievances over nothing, you're all feckin' boring.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Best Supporting Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating and dissecting the performances of our favorite Best Supporting Actresses. My name is Nick Kachanov, and I got hit by a car today.
And my name is Colin Drucker, and that's an excellent choice.
Ooh, yes. Oh. Honestly, there's so many quotes to pull from. I was like stressing, but that was the first one I wrote down, and I was like, no. I like that choice.
Yeah.
I like that choice.
I think that's great. You know, I thought...
I loved Robert.
Oh, God. Oh, well, we'll talk about Robert. Oh, we'll talk about all of them. We'll talk about everybody. We're going to talk about the BSAs of 2001's I Am Sam.
Oh, my gosh. I dusted off my DVD for this.
Wow.
It was the one... It's one of those DVD covers where it's like... It has that like... almost like two spines, and you like lift up the spine on the right, and then like it's one of the weird ones, but yeah, put it in the old DVD player, and it took me right back to that time. Now wait, is this your first time watching, or you just haven't seen it in a while as well?
I just haven't seen it in a long time, and I apologize. Okay. I had put myself on mute so I could clear my throat while you were talking, and then I couldn't get unmuted, and I wanted to respond to your DVD. I didn't want you to think I didn't care.
DVD.
I don't know if I can. I think I know what you're talking about by that DVD case. I just didn't want you to think I didn't care. I was just
stuck on mute. I was like, well, fuck my DVD then.
I was just banging on the window. Let me out of here.
Yes.
So I remember seeing this. I'm going to assume I saw it in the theaters. We've talked about this. I saw it in one theater. I remember seeing it in the theater way back in, I must have been, because it came out December of 2001. So we were a post 9/11 America, which I keep bringing up because I think I'm kind of fascinated by like, what did America do the last time we really took a wallop? Because I don't know what we're doing now post, you know, or in this, whatever, post COVID, but like,
yes.
I think maybe we may have potentially handled it better 20 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah.
Different tragedy, same country. I don't know. Maybe that knocked us down a peg and we weren't ready for COVID yet. I don't know why I'm talking about COVID in an I Am Sam episode, but.
You love COVID.
I love COVID. So I just like, whenever I think of like, especially a movie like this, I think, oh, Christmas time. First Christmas after 9/11, I Am Sam. It's like a nice warm hug, you know? So there is a point to this tangent. There's a timely context for when this movie came out that I assume served me well. I remember loving it. I remember just like swooning. And I don't think I saw it again since. So this may be the first time I've seen I Am Sam in like, 23 years.
Yeah, isn't that something? I feel like I was either a freshman in high school, somewhere around there too. And I think this was like the first movie that I like really latched on to. And like, even though it didn't have any sort of Oscar, like Sean Penn was nominated, which great, but also we need to talk about all the other women in this movie too. But I felt like this is like one of those movies that you watch in high school, at least for me, and I was like, wow, these are like such good performances, and this is like a film, because you know, it was like drama, and it was like someone playing an adult with like learning disabilities or just cognitive disabilities as well, which is such Oscar bait too. It's very Rain Man and like everything of the sorts, but I really loved it, and I forgot how funny this movie is. It is so funny.
It is. It's well, and so I think to your point, like I remember feeling the same way of like, because it was just like in that prime cataloging era, you know, I was like a sophomore in high school, and the same feeling, like, oh, I'm seeing like I'm seeing how it's done, you know? And I'm not saying that it's not good, but I think now I can kind of see that it does straddle the line between like film and like TV movie. But it is really funny and really endearing. And I feel like there could, you know, some people could hop on Twitter and say, well, this movie hasn't aged well. Sean Penn, you know, doesn't have, you know, mental whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I don't care. I think that's the answer to that one. Yeah. I don't care. And it got me thinking about like the whole like playing gay, you know, and it's like, and it's funny. I think Trixie and Katya just talked about this on Bald and Beautiful.
Yes, I just listened to it. Yeah. Go on.
And so, you know, to crib from what Katya said, it's about playing gay well. That's really what it's about. It's oh my God, when they, because then they parlayed into like, you know, gay men can't play straight characters except in musical theater. And then the whole thing of like,
oh, that whole
I asked my girlfriend to marry me. And
diamond cut on those hands. Yeah.
Princess cut, yeah. I mean, it was just...
Princess cut, yes.
But, like, that's really what it comes down to. I don't care about only gay actors should play gay characters. Like, we just did a few weeks ago, All of Us Strangers. I didn't even know Andrew Scott was gay. I thought they were both straight.
Oh!
So, you know, egg on my face.
Wow. Okay, there it is.
But
sorry, Mr. Egg.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Mr. Eck.
Oh, it's so cute.
But yeah, so like there's an example of like, whoa, one of them was straight, one of them was gay. I didn't, you know, works for me because they both did it well.
Very effective.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there's, going back to just like what I remember, what I don't remember. I mean, really, the lineup of women in this movie, we have Michelle Pfeiffer, we have Diane Wiest, we have a young Maren Hinkle as Patricia, the assistant, who is in. And I was like, I know her. Like, I don't know who this face is. And I was like, who plays Patricia? And yeah, of Mrs. Maisel lore, Maren Hinkle, and she's so good in this. She only has like really two scenes, I feel, but that single tear, I'll never forget it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, you're bringing up a great point that this movie is the women of I Am Sam. Well, a lot of attention could and should go, you know, certainly to Sean Penn. He does give a really phenomenal performance, and
yeah, I think so.
I think it's all done very sensitively. I have never seen, and I'm not sure if I know I want to, but I don't know if it's better for me to not see it and think I know what it is or see it and know. But the movie Riding the Bus with My Sister, are you familiar with that one?
No, let me look this up here while you chat.
Oh boy. I'm just gonna let you look it up because I feel like I need you to just discover the details on your own. Gentle listeners at home, you know what we're getting to. You know what goes on on that bus.
So we have Rosie O'Donnell, Andie MacDowell, you love her.
Oh yeah.
Richard T. Jones, D.W. Moffat, okay, Roberta Maxwell. Should I know Roberta Maxwell?
Well, it's more like the movie is about this woman with Down syndrome who rides the bus. And I'll let you guess which one of them plays a woman with Down syndrome, whether it's Andie MacDowell or Rosie O'Donnell.
I was just going to say it's probably Rosie.
It's probably Rosie. And she gives like a Mad TV character performance. And it's all directed by Angelica Houston, which I think is then the sprinkles on the cupcake. You know, Eileen.
Yeah, Eileen that's Rand. Interesting.
So it's infamously terrible, but I really want to see it. But the point is, I don't think that Sean Penn is doing a Riding the Bus with My Sister performance. No. I think it's much more informed, and I feel like it's a humanizing portrayal of somebody with a mental disability in like a non, like, I don't know, like in a very believable way.
I think so too. Cause that was sort of running through my mind is like, would this hold up today or would this be problematic or, you know, A, B, C, or D. But I do think it is good. I think he should have been nominated for the Oscar. I actually don't know who won that year, but
I'll find
out. It's a solid nomination. And really, there's so many layers to this performance, too, especially like in the last act, like when shit really hits the fan, to see Sam lose his spark is is really something to behold, I think, and like kind of almost mature and grow, maybe not cognitively, but a little bit, you know, like I feel like there is this sort of change in him that is really interesting to watch as the movie kind of wraps up. But yeah.
So to answer your question from earlier, Sean Penn lost the Oscar to Denzel Washington for Training Day.
Oh, yes. And it's just so interesting because this feels like such a Michelle Pfeiffer Best Supporting Actress nomination. And I know I'm kind of getting into the thick of it now, too, but I just don't understand why she wasn't. Like, especially since there is attention to, like, people were paying attention to this movie for Sean Penn. And I think Michelle Pfeiffer is just really giving it. I don't know why they skipped over her.
I don't know. I mean, we can, you know, I think we've given Sean Penn his due. Let's get into the ladies. Let's start with Michelle. So this was, I mean, I guess if we just want to talk about who was nominated that year, this was the year we've talked about. Marissa Tomei was nominated for In the Bedroom, and Ooh. Helen Mirren and Maggie Smith were nominated for Gosford Park, and Kate Winslet was nominated for Iris, and then... And I have not seen the whole movie, but I've seen enough of it to know that I don't understand this one. Jennifer Connelly for A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, that's always been one for me that just... I'm like, all right. Again, it's like the movie that, like, everyone was watching that movie and everyone loved that movie. And I remember watching it and I was like, all right, this is fine.
I mean, I saw like a little of it and like I've seen, I guess, what people would consider like her scene or her moments, and it was just like, I mean, I never want to do A Beautiful Mind because I don't think I have anything to say.
No, same, yeah. For the same reasons. And maybe she's a great gal, but I don't think anything happened to her after that. I felt like it was too soon for her to win in her career, and maybe she had been working and I had just not been noticing, but like, she feels like such a Demi Moore type. Like, I just feel like anything that she went out for after that was just given to Demi Moore or like another actress or Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, well, Jennifer Connelly, you know, we've talked about doing Little Children, which I always forget Jennifer Connelly is in. And so that is something, well, you know, we'll get her, because there was a period like Jennifer Connelly, you know, she's in Pollock. So if we ever do Pollock, she's in that. Of course, she's in
She's
in Requiem for a Dream, of course.
Yes, that's true.
So like,
that's
she started true. As like a child actor. She's in this like wackadoo Italian horror movie called Phenomena. But then, yeah, she was in it. I remember her in the 90s being in The Rocketeer, which is like a movie I'll never watch. And then she had her prestige movie era. Because she did Requiem for a Dream, and then she was in Pollock, Beautiful Mind, well, then Hulk, and then House of Sand and Fog, and Little Children, and Reservation Road. And then I think it was just like, you know, as you said, in the words of Jennifer Lopez, enough, you know? but she's been working ever since. This woman hasn't stopped. She was in 19 episodes of Snowpiercer, and... you know, of course, God, people are screaming at their Victrolas right now, but she was in Top Gun Maverick as well.
Okay.
Kind of playing the classic action movie cool girl, you know?
Yeah, I've never been excited about her or like left a movie or, you know, saying, wow, Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah.
It's just like, and Glenn Close doesn't have an Oscar. You just think of these women. I don't know. It's just, sad.
It's a weird world.
I don't know why I'm hating on Jennifer Connelly. Yeah. She's fine.
You know,
she's
well,
fine.
You know, when we do Pollock or when we do Little Children, I mean, even House of Sand and Fog has a great supporting performance by, I always butcher her name, Shora Agdashlu. And you're like, oh, yeah, of course, Shora.
Yeah, I'm like, God bless you, as RuPaul would say. Ew, did you hear how I said God? It was so Pittsburgh. I said
you.
God bless
God
you
bless
with
you.
An H. Ew, I'm so repulsed.
G-U-H-B-L-E-S-H-Y-O-U.
Oh,
you.
God. It's his losh. It's his losh. Yeah.
But indeed, you know, yeah, Michelle is great in this. But I'll say this. It took me a minute. Like, at first, I was like, is the role wearing Michelle or is Michelle wearing the role? Like, is... is she...
Let's talk about it. Let's talk right? about it, yes.
Like, is she playing... Because, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, you know, because you, you've gone the past 23, 24 years just avoiding this movie, like, you know, the plague, not to bring COVID back into it, but I Am Sam is about a man with mental disabilities, or whatever term we're supposed to use now, who has a baby with a homeless woman who then splits, and he's just left with this baby that he raises until she's about 7 years old, and she's played by Dakota Fanning. And then, you know, one thing leads to another, and Child Protective Services gets, you know, they, you know, he, you know, reaches their attention, and now then it becomes a custody issue, and then she gets taken away from him, and so Sam hires, or ends up getting Michelle Pfeiffer's character Rita, as a pro bono lawyer. Pro bono. Oh my God. Pro bono. That was not on purpose. A pro bono lawyer.
Oh my God. I love that you said that. Yes. Yes. What's their number? Yeah. I love that you kept going for like a little bit. And you're like, wait. It was good. I would have let it go, but we would have talked about it afterwards. Report to HR. Hello?
HR.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he gets this, you know, well, I guess it's given to the fact that it's Michelle Pfeiffer and she is so fucking hot. She really is pro boner.
Peak. Yeah.
I am consistently less gay with women like her and Dakota Johnson. I am just less gay. But you know, not to just reduce Michelle Pfeiffer to her, you know, pro or anti boner energy. At first, she's like the tough, fast talking, driving the Porsche, getting her steps in, you know, no nonsense bossing her assistant Patricia around kind of lawyer. And I think it was the scene where she was driving Sam to his like hearing or his like evaluation, and she's like speeding through traffic and she's like, "Move out of the way, dummy," and like things like that, where I was just like, "I'm not buying this." But then, similar to like Cammy D in The Holiday, as it went on, Rita opened up and I fell in love.
That's a great comparison. I love that because it's the same energy, right? Of like her kicking, Cammy D kicking her husband out of the house and being like, ooh. It's like it was overkill. It's like part of me would love to see all of that like just tightly wound bitchy lawyer energy like at a 4 as opposed to a 10. Like I'm almost like a Miranda Priestly, like everyone's afraid of her but she's so good at her job. You could still be dismissive and scary or some kind of balance in between, because you're right, it is just like it's a lot to take in. But yes, I think the more that she mellows out, and I think, you know, to really show that full arc with how much Sam has changed her over. It's like it came so close to that like cliche line, like, I think I'm getting more out of this relationship than you are. You know, that line. I was like, guys,
right.
We didn't need that.
Right.
Like, just have her a knowing glance. Well, I'm all for a knowing glance.
I think a perfect example, because I know exactly. I know. I felt the same way when it got to that point. I was like, oh, come on, don't. Show, don't tell. But later in when they're at the diner, you know, and he says, you know, I can be your friend. And she kind of just like her eyes tear up and she says, thank you. And it's just like this perfect moment where like she accepts his friendship and you really kind of see a shift in their relationship. And I thought that was a great way to do what they were kind of forcing in that other moment.
Yes, because it's a very human moment that leads up to that point, too, I feel, where he's talking about you need to leave your husband.
Yeah.
Because it's like you don't. You feel that Sam might not be able to see that or kind of suss that out, that like she, you know, she has flaws, too, or whatever. But I have, this is off topic, but on topic. Did Sam and Rita like fuck? Do you remember that scene?
Yes.
Like. Okay, there's the hug, and then there's the scene after the hug. Go on.
Well, yes. I know. So when he's hugging, because I was feeling this, and I was like, what? I don't remember this part of the movie. But, you know, she starts, you know, she has that whole monologue in his apartment, and she's crying, and then he hugs her, and he, you know, he kisses her shoulder, and he kisses her cheek, and, like, and then like the scene like dissolves into like, and then just like hugging. And so I did not, because I was thinking like, oh, is he gonna like, this would really suck if this turned into something.
Yeah.
And it didn't, but do you just mean because then they were kind of like, when she was like, you know, hello, Mr. Dawson, and he was like, hello, lawyer.
Yes.
I think that was just because things got too vulnerable in that moment.
Gotcha.
I think that's what it was. Okay. I don't think it was like, oh, remember when you made me come three times last night? You know, like, I don't know, it was like that, you know?
On top of the origami, right, the pile of origami.
Right, yeah, exactly. And you just, like, kept quoting the Beatles.
Yes.
And so, yeah, that's all I thought it was. It was not like, yeah, you know, a moment of passion, which just, listen, you know, I don't know if, I feel like it's been making the waves of social media a little bit, maybe for, maybe just on Twitter just a little bit, but there was an ad that came out recently with a girl who has Down syndrome who's like, you assume that I can't learn and so I don't learn. You assume I can't drink. You assume I can't do this or that and so I don't. And it was just kind of like about, you know, like, people with Down syndrome can do, you know, as adults can do and be a lot more than they get credit for. And I don't know. I feel like I don't know why I'm bringing that up, but I just feel like it's, it brings up,
I mean, I guess potentially they could fuck.
Yeah, that,
maybe
exactly.
If that's where we're, yeah.
Right, like,
it's like, it seems, besides like lawyer and client, not confidentiality, but just like crossing the line there. Like,
the relationship,
if he didn't have, like, he wasn't differently abled in any way, it could have happened. And why couldn't it have, you know? But like, I guess it would have been a totally different movie if it had.
Well, yeah, and I it does kind of, I don't know, like, I think I saw somebody, some dodo on like Twitter bring this up about Poor Things, how like essentially in the beginning, Emma Stone's character is just like a sexual baby. And I had COVID. I was sleeping through most of it. I'm not here to talk about that. But, you know, it does kind of bring up that question that I don't think here on the Best Supporting Podcast we have to answer. But that idea of like, well, you know, what does consent look like when somebody's mental, emotional maturity is at an age below consent?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that, like, Sean Penn at this part of his life, he's hot. I mean, like, he's such a goose in this movie too. Those blue eyes, like, forget about
it.
He has great hair.
Yeah,
I don't know where Sam gets his haircut, but whoever's cutting his hair is doing a great job. He's a handsome man. Mm-hmm. And there's even a little bit of that, it's like, it feels weird to say sexual tension, but like whenever he wears the suit, you know, and like she gives him a little bit of a look.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
She sees him differently.
I know it didn't happen, but it just feels, I don't know why this is important to me that we talk about it, but it's something I never really thought of until this watch. But anyway, this is all to say that Michelle really does, I think my one complaint is, let's talk about the scene that where she kicks down his door because he lost the court case. He has a meltdown. What'd you say? I'm sorry.
No. I feel like you're going somewhere I wanted to go as well. So I'm just encouraging you. Run, Forrest, run. Yeah.
Because this is where she really starts cooking with gas, and she has, you know, he has that also great. It's just a really well written scene where he says, like, because I think really one of Sam's biggest mountains to climb is that he can feel the emotions, but he can't articulate, like his brain is working faster than his mouth, or, you know, something like that. He can't get it out. Like, he knows what he wants to do, but he really just can't. Mm-hmm. And he goes on this diatribe about, like, you were born perfect and you don't have any problems and you don't have any emotions or something like that. And she knocks down the origami tent that he's built and really gives him a piece of her mind. And it's a beautiful monologue, but she never sheds a tear. And I needed it. I needed it. Because she has these wonderful moments of just, like, simple tears at the diner, you know, when he calls and said, I could be your friend. And that's even when I first watched this and rewatched it 1,000 times in high school, that's what I wanted. But it almost feels like she can't even get it out at the same time. So it is effective. I just wanted it. It looks like a blood vessel is going to pop in her left eye or like her neck or something. But I don't know how you felt about it.
I had the exact same thought and the exact same feeling in that we, we don't see it, because I was looking for it. I was like, I don't see a single tear. And this is an opportunity, especially for this character, to get a little ugly, you know? I mean, to really, I think, you know, you think about, you know, to mention Miranda Priestley again, you think about Meryl in that scene in The Devil Wears Prada when she goes to her house and she's, you know, been crying and whatnot. It just shows us such a different side of this very uptight, buttoned up character. And I thought that's what the point of this scene was, but like, not a tear was shed. And yet then there's other scenes where we see the tears in her eyes. Like, she's Michelle, she's capable of it. I had the same feeling. I really, that scene didn't really pull me in the way I wanted it to, because I kept just feeling how it was a performance.
It felt like the first take.
Yes.
It felt like it was a rehearsal, and they're like, all right, Shelly, give it a whirl. We'll put the origami thing back up in a second. And because it has levels, too. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Sally Field's monologue in Steel Magnolias, where she changes, like, because she's, like, almost crying, and then she's like, I know you deserve better. I know that I'm doing everything wrong, but just get in the fucking car. Mm-hmm. Like, that drop is so calculated and perfect, and I was like, yes, this is exactly it. But there's just not a tear.
I agree. Ugh. I agree completely. It really it took, because
and maybe that's why.
Yeah and maybe that's why. And you know, I'll say, it's like, listen, Michelle is, I just really like Michelle Pfeiffer. I just love her.
Same.
I think that she is, I mean, it bears repeating, just some people are so beyond human possibilities of beauty. She is so fucking beautiful. Mm-hmm. Her voice is so beautiful. Like, she's just been graced. She got a pretty name, you know, like, it all worked out. But I do think I don't know, I feel like we talked about this with J-Lo, where it's like, J-Lo, with good material, J-Lo is good. But without good material, J-Lo is not so good. And yeah. I feel like Michelle Pfeiffer is not on the J-Lo level, but I feel like if with a different director, or like a, I don't know, like, she could have done better with help. I don't know. I believe in her, you know?
Yeah, same. We're always rooting for her. And like, even like the word, like, friggin' raptor scooter, like when she's yelling, like, why couldn't that have been like fucking raptor scooter?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, it's crazy to think that like she was like, I think, the original pick for Clarice Starling in Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And who knows what it would have been like, but, you know, it is what it is. But, yeah. Anyway, I think, you know, I think it's good that we talked about Michelle, because we got her covered. Because I think we need sort of to your point of like, why didn't Michelle get nominated? I think for some reason my revisionist history said that Dakota Fanning got nominated for this movie, but she didn't.
Should have been. Should have.
Yeah.
Definitely should have. It's crazy to me.
She is. I mean, child actors, you know, like, listen, they're mostly terrible, or can be like overly precocious, or it feels like they're just not acting like a human being. They're acting like a creepy adult child. And I think that she's probably the best child actor I've ever seen in a movie, or one of the best in the top five. Let's say in the top five.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, put that in writing. There's going to be, you know, like, the Dakota Fanning Award for Excellence in Child Acting at the Westons this year. I think we might have to start it, because it's so true. She's a revelation. Like, I have never seen that. And I knew she was good, and like, it was her breakout role, and she had like so many things beyond this too. But there is such a, it's not precociousness, it's like maturity. And it works so well for this movie, because she has to be like smarter than him, and maybe more mature than him, but she's still able to be a kid. But she's so fucking smart. Even in that scene where she's like under oath and she's like lying, and then like one of my favorite Rita moments is when she puts, because like she starts lying under oath and Rita reaches in a bowl of candy and puts it in her pocket and rolls her eyes. It's so funny. I loved that choice. But I do think that it is egregious that we did not nominate her, because, you know, I know Elle Fanning is, you know, she's in that show The Great, but I, and like, you know, what did we give Dakota Fanning? She was in like the Twilight movies, you know, like, ugh, I just, I want her to return. I want her to have something great because the world needs to be reminded who we fell in love with.
Well, let's see what, because, you know, it's a tricky thing to, I think, like, transition. Like, you know, we've seen this with Dakota Fanning and Abigail Breslin and, like, I don't know, like other child stars, but those are the only two I can think of. I feel like it's tricky because it's like she's definitely still working, but, like, she had, like, such a specific appeal, you know, as a child actor because of all the things we talked about. And I mean, she showed up in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes. So I was just going to say that.
Yep. I mean, I don't know how big a role it was, but it's like, yeah, she's been in some, like, weird, like, none of these, I don't know how big her role was in Ocean's 8. You know, she was in the first Lady miniseries, you know, but mostly what we knew about that with Michelle Pfeiffer. By the way, she played Michelle Pfeiffer. She played Betty Ford's daughter. She played Susan Ford. So she and Michelle Pfeiffer, a reason to watch the First Lady, not just because of what's her name's Viola Davis's performance of Michelle Obama. That
lives.
I don't.
That really was a rough spot.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe we need to, like, cover an episode of that just to understand, like, what is this performance?
God, please don't make me do that. Know. Please don't make me go to Brooklyn. Liz Lemon.
But yeah, I know. I feel like she, you know, and who knows? I feel like sometimes she's definitely got a few projects coming up. Here's what she's going to be in. I knew I was dancing around something that she's going to be in. The new Talented Mr. Ripley, the new miniseries. Ripley.
Nice.
With Andrew Scott playing Tom Ripley, and she is playing Marge, the Gwyneth Paltrow character.
Love that. Okay, ask and we shall
receive. Yeah, and that's coming out on April 4th. So ask, and you are receiving.
Ugh.
Oh my God.
Love it. I love this. Yeah.
Oh, that feels so good. There, that feels good. Yeah, I think there's just, like, a really beautiful, like, compassion in her performance. And I think the scene at the birthday party, or, like, certain scenes where she's watching Sam kind of spin out, or, you know, just kind of lose some control, and you can see the mortification on her face. You can see her trying to just, like, keep a stiff upper lip. And it's like, how the fuck do you know that complexity of emotions? Like, and I'm buying it. I'm not seeing an adult tell you to do it. I'm buying that you literally are, like, you're feeling these feelings and you understand them.
Yep. And, you know, I read in the IMDb that she thought about her pet fish flounder whenever she had to cry, which I love.
Ugh.
She's just... especially when Sam comes back and she's like, you didn't call, you didn't write.
That scene. Oh, when she comes running out. And like, at that point in the movie, like, we're all feeling that, like, oh, great, Sam's finally going to get to see Lucy again. And the way that she plays that is, that's the little clip they should be playing at the Oscars for her nomination.
Yeah, it's just truly nuts. I just really, I mean, I cried so many times in this movie, but one of them was where we first really can tell that she's advancing, you know, she's at a higher reading level than Sam, and she's like, I don't want to read if you can't, and she's kind of crying as she says it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful, and because it's... This woman.
This woman. And the when
she's not a girl. She's Miss Toller. Yeah,
that's Judge Toller. And be quiet.
Miss who? Yeah.
But when she's doing the Girl Scout cookies and with Randy, and they run into Sam, and when Lucy and Sam are going back and forth about the number 9 and, like, about the dog and whatnot, and it was just like the rapport that she had with him was just so beautiful. And I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
Because I think that if...
I can picture...
I was going to say, if Lucy wasn't good, I think this movie would be, like, it would be very much in the lines of, like, I'm getting more out of this relationship than you are. Like, it would feel too treacly if she was, like, over-the-top child actor.
Yeah, she's a key player. I really think, like, without Sean Penn and without Dakota Fanning, this movie would have been, like you said, Lifetime levels.
Mm.
And I just picture, like, in my I Am Sam fan fiction, like, Lucy at her graduation, she's valedictorian, of course. And Sam's there in the front row with Rita and all the, oh my God, I can't wait to talk about his friends. Oh. It's, and just, you know, it's going to be, I want to be there for it. It's so believable. And like, she's going to take care of him.
Yeah. Like by the,
she's going to be like, she's going to get a great job.
By the end, I was like, there's like a TV show here. There's a little series here about like,
yep,
Sam and mm-hmm. Rita and, you know, and all of his little friends. And obviously, you know, we're going to have to talk about Annie. You know, let's talk about, because, you know, we get Sean Penn, we get Shelley Pfeiffer, we get Dakota Fanning, and it's like, we're not even, of the people we get Maren Hinkle as Patricia, and I'm so glad you mentioned her, because she popped up just enough in this where I was like, oh, that's a great role. Like, that's a great little, like,
yep, you actually, featured ensemble.
Yeah, like, you,
for
yeah,
sure.
You actually get to kind of be, I know who you are very easily. But we also mm-hmm. get the Wiest. Diane Wiest plays Sam's agoraphobic neighbor, Annie. And I feel like this is one of those roles that, like, Diane slips into, like, a crocheted overcoat. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, she's just like, oh I got
God,
this role
yes.
down, you know?
Oh, yes. I mean, graduate from Juilliard. Like, you're just so happy she's there. Even though she's agoraphobic, like, she's just out of reach, but, like, she's there to help Sam. My opening line was almost like, I just wanted to say, biz.
Oh,
biz.
Yes.
Like, oh,
yes.
So good.
It was so good.
I loved that.
She has such, like, a gentleness with him that I really believe that I don't think she's patronizing him. I think, like, that's one of the things I really liked about this, is I felt like the people closest to Sam weren't treating him like my special friend, but like a real human being. And I thought that she really, like, she didn't treat him like a baby, but, like, I don't know. It was just like another really beautiful relationship that he had.
Yeah, because I really feel, because often, like, especially this watch, I was like, should Sam have her? Like, should he have custody? Like, of course not. Like, it's just, it feels like it's not going to work. But, like, I feel like he also got through the hardest part of, like, having a baby and a toddler and, like, still being able to work at Starbucks and, like, all that. Like, the hard part, not that the hard part's over, but, like, he got this far and no one really seemed to celebrate that or say that out loud, I guess. But also, it's because of Annie. I love that, like, fabric that she, like, waves over, like, baby Lucy. It's just, like, she plays piano. Like, I just want to hang out with Annie at her apartment and have her tell me stories.
Yeah, well, I love that. It took me a little bit to realize, like, whenever Sam would talk about the Beatles, he was always saying, well, and Annie said that, you know, so it's like she taught him about the Beatles. And so everything he knows about them, he knows through the context of, this is what Annie taught me. And I think, like,
yes,
that's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, he sees her, among other things, as, like, she's a part of his Beatles appreciation. Like, she's always quoted when he talks about them.
Yeah, because, I mean, she's kind of, like, the foundation of Sam and, like, really helped. And, like, another question that doesn't really matter is, like, how is Sam paying for that apartment? I know it's not the nicest apartment, but, like, how's he affording that on, like, a Starbucks salary or even prior to that? But these questions really don't matter. But back to Annie, it's like watching her, I'm so glad she got to testify, and, like, her walking that elevator and just, like, shaking and him hugging her. I'm
yeah.
just like, oh, thank God she's here.
Yeah. I assumed, because I had the same question just about his, like, how is he affording this life? I assume he also gets disability checks.
Oh, that's
and
true.
So
that's
he's
true.
Just like supplementing mm-hmm. it. I don't know how all that works, but yeah. And yeah, the fact that she gets herself to Marco, get lost, honestly, hold on a second,
get lost.
But like the fact that like she's able to get herself to the court to testify for him, and then like ends up, like, I couldn't remember what was going to happen in this situation, but, like, ends up giving, like, a really, like, beautiful testimony and, like, says all the right things. And I felt like we see this both from Rita and from Turner, played by Richard Schiff, who I'm sure you love
West
from
Wing.
West Wing.
Hello,
you're
yes.
a big winger. Yeah. You're practically Deborah Winger, you know?
A Westie, yeah.
But, you know, the dirty tricks that they play in the courtroom when he brings up, well, like, what about your father?
Oh.
And, like, that's what shuts her down. And it's just, and all we know is, oh, Annie's father was a bad man. And so it's just like.
He was a meanie.
He was a meanie. That's right. And I just thought, wow, like, that's fucked up.
Yeah, and she slips those blue sunglasses on. I'm just like, fucking Diane Weist, everyone.
Yep.
It's so good. But Rita does that to the other woman in the stand when her son OD'd. It was almost like an Ann Dowd type of woman.
Yeah, so that was Miss Wright, played by Wendy Phillips, who I don't recognize. But exactly, Rita does it to... I think she was a therapist. I think she was the therapist who's doing the evaluation of Sam. And and Rita brings up her son who OD'd and like shuts her down. And I was just like, yeah. Wow. I mean, mm-hmm. it really, I mean, I guess this is why people love courtroom dramas and love legal dramas yeah. so much is like, it's about how do you win the case? Not about who's right and who's wrong, you know, or like, it's not objective. It really is about building a case that you can't that wins, you know,
yep.
and that could, you know, include playing really dirty. And we even, I mean, yeah. I think in a way we kind of see that, you know, speaking of Turner, we kind of see that when Sam is on the witness stand later and you can see the way Turner is like confusing him and like getting him to admit like, yeah, like you agree that you can't give Lucy what she wants. And I think at that point he was just like so upset that he was like, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. I just don't want to do this anymore. And like mm-hmm. anybody with a sensitivity to this guy would recognize that like, he's not in his mental capacity to be answering right now because he's overwhelmed, overstimulated, whatever it is. But like the fact that that's like, it almost works against him. It's like, well, here's all the more reason why you shouldn't be her, you know, her guardian. You can't even control your emotions right now. And it's just,
yes,
it's like, I agree with you. Sam can't raise Lucy on his own, or he certainly needs support yeah. and help. Absolutely. But like this, like what a sick way to like take somebody's child from them, you know?
Yeah, so they're really playing dirty. And this is a deep tease for the after show, too, but I watched Anatomy of a Fall the last 2 days. I kind of split it up. So I really have, you know, I'm courtroomed out
yes.
as far as I'm concerned of just like, because that was, oh my God, it was so fucking long. But good, we'll talk about
yeah.
it on the after show, available on patreon.com/BSAPod.
That's right.
Anyway.
well, you know, we've got a couple other ladies that I think we need to
yes.
talk about. And you know, just to mention, because we kind of see her in the same context, but I had forgotten Loretta Devine was in this.
Yes.
As Margaret from Child Protective Services. I love Loretta Devine. I'm always happy to see Loretta Devine.
I mean, I think she needs, I mean, she's an icon in her own right. She's been working for centuries, an original dream girl with Miss Cheryl Lee Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
I think she needs a Margot Martindale moment. I would love to see her back in the spotlight again in something really great. Just putting that out into the universe since we've already done it for Dakota and No
yeah.
Time Flat.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You did. Like, let me check.
Yeah.
Let me just make sure. What does she have upcoming? Yeah, I would love to see.
Yeah.
Well, she's going to be in a TV series called Holidazed. So we'll see.
All right.
She'll also yeah. be in something called Bull Street playing Mrs. Big Gal. So, you know, any one of those. But I would like to see
All right.
Loretta yeah. in like a... I want to see a Loretta as like a front runner for Best Supporting Actress for something great, you know, not a remake, not a like, let's do the black version of just an original role,
yes.
an original character. Like I think that would be a wonderful moment for Loretta.
Yeah, I need her to be Mary in The Holdovers, you know,
mm-hmm.
I need that to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we'll, you know, more on that. I'll put that on my manifestation list.
Yeah, yeah. you know, I want to talk about his friends, but I don't want to hold us off from talking about Laura Dern any longer.
No, I think it's time. Yes.
Yeah. And I think this, so I don't, from my understanding, most of these men or at least one or two of them were actually, you know, I think that one guy actually has Down syndrome. I don't think that was like prosthetics.
Of course.
So like,
yes.
I thought that was a smart choice to say, well, yeah, certainly actors, you know, with mental disabilities, or again, whatever term we're supposed to be using right now, you know, can certainly, you know, perform in roles and play characters who have Down syndrome or autism or whatever. And I thought this was a great example of that. And these weren't like bit roles that show up once and check a box. We get to see them like four or five times throughout the movie. And like, they're like a Neil Simon Greek chorus of friends, you know?
Obsessed. I think Brad and Joe, I think, were the two that were differently abled. And Brad, honestly, Brad can lead the charge. Brad's the one that like got him the answering machine.
Uh-huh.
I feel like he also had a lot to say about the shoes, maybe. And like, he's so great. And Joe is such a sweetie. He's the one who invited Rita to video night. I love that it's called video night.
Oh, I mean,
that whole scene where they pan over and all six of them are sitting in that booth, I just cackled.
Yeah, I thought that was so sweet. It was like, you could come to video night if you want. And it was just, and which is the one, is it, because Brad is the one who's like, you know, would kind of talk about Gone with the Wind and Judy Garland and whatnot. Like, he would kind of go on those tangents. What was, and then Robert was the guy who had like the anxiety and like, why are you recording me? But like, what was
I loved Robert. And Robert brought over those giant leopard print shoes.
Right. And I've seen him in a bunch of things. That actor is Stanley DeSantis. I've seen him in so many things. Who was the guy with the, I don't want to just reduce him, like the guy with Down syndrome, the guy with...
I thought that was Brad. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm good. Because I thought Ifty, it's like they called him Mr. Wally and they called him Ifty was the one that did all the movie trivia stuff.
Okay, that's...
I thought Brad was the guy with Down syndrome. I could be wrong, but that's what I put in my
notes.
No,
it is. No. You're right. Yeah. You're right. It is. So Brad was, yes, because Doug Hutchison, yes, he played Ifty. He was the guy with the answering machine. He was helping him set it up. That's what it was. Brad bought it.
Yeah, he's like, it's not
him.
Used. It's pre-owned. That's one of my favorite lines.
I thought Brad was my favorite. He was so funny.
Ugh.
And so just like, he just had like such a specific comedic timing that like was beyond, like it wasn't about like, oh my God, this like guy with Down syndrome is funny. He like had genuinely good comedic timing.
Yeah, I mean, when he says like, what? Whenever like Sam finally says no to movie night, and when they're doing the answering machine message, he's like, I felt that was a very touching moment right there. It's so, I just love him. But I think I'm like a combination of like Ifty and Robert with like the paranoia slash anxiety and like endless amounts of movie trivia.
Yes, really.
I really saw a lot of myself in them, and I cackled so much with Robert's line. Like, even when he's in the courtroom, he's like, there's a lady, she's writing everything down, watch what you say. And then friend Sam says, I have the best friends in the whole world.
And they are. Oh. They're just like, they're so lovely. I mean, I seeing it again, I realized it was just like burned in my memory. But when Brad has the shoes that light up, he's like, these shoes light up. And he smashes them together. That is like imprinted in my brain. Ugh.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
They are so special. I love all of them. And they're such a great part of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I really I had forgotten about them completely. And I thought it was a really smart way to kind of just like also recognize, like, I'm sure for a number of reasons you couldn't cast Brad Silverman as Sam. Getting funding for the movie,
for sure.
Getting attention for it, beyond like the complexities of playing the role or anything like that. I think it's just like, then there's also like the Hollywood movie making of it, of like, well, you get a star attached, things might happen, you know?
It's like Leo and What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Yeah.
You know, it goes back to like the Katya thing. It's like, as long as it's good, it's fine. And I know that sounds bold to say, but like, I feel that that performance and this performance are pretty on par. Like, same level of just really being authentic, or at least like really caring about how good it is, I guess, from the actor's standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to take it back to like the how well do you play gay, it's like if it feels like you're humanizing and you're bringing to life like a real person who is gay versus playing a stereotype or like playing something that's like absolutely like so far from reality. It's kind of like that's the difference. It's not like, oh, yeah, Eric McCormick, how dare you play Will Truman? Will Truman is such an accurate representation of a specific type of gay man. I can't argue with how perfect that performance is for who he was portraying. So,
yeah,
go poop in your hat, America. you know, other than, because, you know, you did mention the very important term, best featured ensemble. I think this movie is littered with like little featured ensemble performances.
Yes.
Yeah. There was Marion Hinkle as Patricia. There was Mary Steenburgen as Dr. Blake. I thought she was very sweet. Grace at the IHOP.
Grace the waitress, yes,
played by Pamela Dunlap, is an alumna. She's an alumlap of the podcast.
No way.
Maybe even more than one role, but she played and I don't remember all the details, but she played the lady on the plane in, I think, The Wedding Date. Because I think I was like, oh, this is who I would play.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I love that callback.
So, Pamela Dunlap. The Wedding Date. It's going to drive me nuts. I searched through her IMDb, and I can't figure it out. But the woman who, like, the sex worker who tries to pick up Sam at the mall, Lily, is played by this woman, Rosalind Chow. I don't know why I know her, but I was like, I know you. But I can't figure...
Same. I had the same thought.
Yeah. I can't figure out what. I was looking through IMDb. I've never seen The Joy Luck Club, but she's in that. And that might be an interesting movie to do sometime. Because it's...
Yeah, maybe that's where I've
maybe
seen her. Yeah, but I've never seen it either.
Yeah. But anyway, so she was sticking out to me. And then the waitress at the new diner they go to when he wants the pancakes, which I thought Dakota Fanning was incredible in that scene. Her name is Kathleen Robertson. And I was like, why do I know you? And I was looking through her IMDb, and there's nothing like specific that I'm like, oh, okay, I've seen that. But I know her. She may have been my babysitter. I don't know. But I know her.
A whole slew of them. Yeah, they all seem familiar. And really, Maren Hinkle was the only one that I plucked out. But
Oh, and then the woman who plays the family court judge, played by Roma Mafia. And she has a beautiful line reading where he's like, I wanted to make it really special for Lucy and whatnot. And she's like, Mr. Dawson, I am sure you gave her a very special day. But then she just like gets to business. She just has this and I know her as well. And I was like, oh, I love her, but I have no idea where I know Roma Mafia from. She was in 96 episodes of Nip Tuck, but I didn't watch Nip Tuck, so.
Neither did I. Is that the one that had like a Jane Kasmerick sort of vibe?
Yes, exactly. That's okay, a great. Yes.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking at least, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she was in one episode of NCIS. She was in 4 episodes of Grey's Anatomy. I'm checking. I'll check on JAG. Hold on. Let me check. Oh, she was in Boston Legal.
JAG.
I'm not seeing that she was ever in JAG, but she was in Judging Amy and ER and Ally McBeal and The West Wing. Maybe that's where you know her from.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Of course.
And there's a movie called Things You Can Tell Just by Looking at Her that I've seen that she is in. Anyway, the point being... Oh, and then the shoe salesman at the shoe store was played by Brent Spiner, who played Data on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Okay. He was mean to Sam, though. I didn't like
he
that.
He was, yeah. I loved when he was, like, collecting the change. He's like, is that enough? And he's like, God willing, yes, I'll count it.
Yes. I'm like, hey.
Hey, be nice to him.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge that, like, yeah, and even you mentioned before, Elle Fanning plays Lucy at 2 years old. So
yeah, I love
we
that.
Even get a little bit of Elle. But yeah, it's honestly, I really enjoyed this movie. I'm very fascinated in general by the early 2000s as an era. And not just because the 9/11 thing, but because like I just can't put my finger on what is the like how do you sum up 2000 to 2010 as an era, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a defined decade to me. I know exactly what you're saying. And maybe it's just because that was like such a, I don't know, it was like post-college for us, but kind of college. I know what you're saying, but I also have the same difficulty. Also, we didn't talk about Laura Dern yet.
Oh my God! After all that, how did we not even talk about Laura
That's okay.
Dern? Oh,
you said I think it's time to talk about Laura Dern, but then you talked about the Friends. I was like, I'll talk about the Friends. I was following your lead in this tango. So let's end this episode by talking about Ms. Dern.
Oh my goodness, the red in your painting, Randy Carpenter. So she shows up. You know, she's the foster mom that they send Lucy to. And so she doesn't show up till really like the last maybe half hour or so of the movie.
Yeah, final act.
Yeah. And I don't know who her husband was, but he was hot. He didn't have much of a role.
Yeah.
But he was cute. I'd like to try to get pregnant with him. this is a Laura Dern role. No one else but Laura Dern can play this role.
Yeah. And there's so many layers, too, because you do feel for her. You do feel for Randy because she probably, you could tell, even without knowing their story as just like two people that want to have a child, you know that like she's been waiting for this. And, you know, like the room that she made for her and how hard she's trying. And she has the two easels in the front yard. And it's like this perfect white picket fence sort of life. And like the fact that Lucy is just like this amazing kid probably makes it hurt so much more for her that she just, it isn't working.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. And yeah, right. I think there's such an implied story about like Randy as a foster mom and like that sense of like, yeah, that she really wants this. And like, she's doing all the right things. She seems great. She's not like some evil. This is not It Takes Two when,
yes,
one of them gets sent to live,
yes,
with the Bupkisses or whatever their names were.
The Bupkisses.
But yeah, like she's great. And they have a nice house in the suburbs. Like it's all there. And I think that it's just like, I think that's the point of the movie, right? Is like the court is like, here is what we consider to be the appropriate environment for Lucy. She has two stable, you know, normal, quote unquote, in terms of intellect and ability and whatnot, parents, they can provide for her, blah, 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 financial stability, all of that. And like, yes, all of that is great. But I think the conclusion that Randy and Sam come to at the end is like, but it's not everything. And Sam alone isn't enough. And Randy alone isn't enough. But like,
yeah,
together and with the little village around them, like, that could be enough. That could actually be a lot fucking more than most people have.
Yeah. I mean, in my mind, I was like, because we were texting and I was like, Laura Dern in the stairs, just wait. And it's just so beautiful. Like that whole scene, like the fact that the stairs are red or like she's wearing red, there's so much like blue and red sort of symbolism going on throughout the movie. But it's like this like fire and ice sort of combination, but Sam comes out eventually and because, you know, Sam moves closer to Randy and Lucy and she keeps escaping and finally Laura Dern brings her back. And she, like you said, she realizes that, I mean, just her and that line delivery of like, I was going to sort of, you know, work the system a little bit to tell the court that like she could give her the love that she never had, but she just can't in good conscience do that because she sees how much love there is between them. And he comes out and he says, like, I always wanted her to sort of have a mother and that you're the red in her paintings. And Laura Dern just sort of like collapses onto the stairs.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's like, where's her Oscar for that scene? Marriage Story? Yeah,
I know. Maybe it was just like, oh, let's recognize the work you did in 2001 and all the the emotional gravitas you brought to running away from that raptor in Jurassic Park, you know?
Yes, run.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I loved when she first gets there because she makes that agreement with Lucy, which I thought was really beautiful, of like, anytime you want to see your dad, you just tell me. We just have to work that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love that it was like she wanted to see him. And so, she, you know, Randy brought her over. And then by the time she gets there, Lucy was asleep. And I love the way she said, and I didn't want her to like wake up and not be home, you know, and just like, and I think that really summed it up of like, I'm trying to do what's best, but like, I want her to wake up and feel like she's home. And how do we do that? And,
yes,
and you know, I don't need to know like all of the legal stuff of how do they coordinate all of this with the courts and whatnot, but like I don't care because like we don't see the final court, you know, date the next day. It's just like cut to that wackadoo soccer game, you know.
I know. It's so, I guess, so 2001.
Yes.
It just feels like everyone sort of wins. Everyone's moving forward as a unit. Like you said, the village that's going to help raise Lucy. And what a lucky girl.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, you know, by the end, I was like, this kid, this is like, you have more than anyone. You have too much, Lucy. You know, now I don't feel bad for you at all. You know? But no, it's
my goodness.
I guess my one concern is because Sam moved, I thought, oh, who's checking on Annie? You know?
That's what I thought too. Yes. Yeah. I was like, that's a lot. But, you know, I feel like once Lucy grows up, you know, maybe she'll take piano lessons from Rita. Like, of course.
From Annie. Yeah. Or Rita. Maybe Rita will learn to teach piano.
Oh, sorry. But... from Annie. Yeah. Yes.
yeah. I loved it. You know,
great movie.
And this soundtrack is great. It's all Beatles covers. And like, I know that Fiona Apple did a cover of Across the Universe, but it was Rufus.
Wainwright.
Wainwright, who did it in this movie. And that song, man, that just like rips my eyeballs out. That song gets me every time. It's just like so.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh, it just gets me. And so like I slipped a few bucks to the orchestra to see if they would play us off with it.
Oh, beautiful.
And now
well
they're
done.
Doing it. They're playing us off to it. How do you like that? Fucking crazy.
Just like you said.
Just like I said. Manifested it. Before we shuffle off across the universe, where can folks find more of you?
They can find me on my other podcast, The Good Vanilla, which is a Barefoot Contessa podcast, or you can follow me on Instagram at Nick Kochanov. How about you?
Well, of course, you can hear more of me on my other podcast, All Right Mary, where we are still covering season 16 of RuPaul's Drag Race. And you can find me on Instagram at ColinDrucker_, and you can find more of both of us on Instagram at a best supporting capacity at BSAPod.
Or you can send us an email at thebsapod@gmail.com.
And I am Peepers. I am peeled.
Yeah, keep those Sams peeled.
You better keep those Sams peeled.
Yes.
Peepers in the sky with diamonds, you know?
There it is.
Because we've got... You better keep your peepers in the sky with diamonds. And by that, I mean peeled. Because the best supporting after show is coming. It's back. Well, it was back last week, but it's back again. And we have got a lot to catch up on. And if you want to hear that, if you want to hear early access to episodes just like this, and you want all that for $5 a month, then you could just go to patreon.com/BSAPod, and you could join us as a BSAtreon.
Yeah, got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. Yeah, should be fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's time for you and I to get into two pre-owned newsletter editor cells named Ruth and Cheryl and get the hell out of Stepford.
I like that plan.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Then we're going to do it. And that, as they good. Say,
is that. Nothing's going to change my world. Nothing's going to change.